The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Back onto the stick of Quinn Hughes and across the line. Hughes for Boldy. Now Quinn Hughes. We played 3.5 minutes in overtime. Quinn Hughes shoots. He scores! He scores! Quinn Hughes in overtime wins it. And the United States will move on and face Slovakia. In the semis.
Welcome to the Sports Kings from Queens, where all the sports talk is royal, real, and straight from the boroughs. Today's Wednesday, February 18th. This is episode 219. I'm Gino, joined by my co-hosts, Kevin and Darren. Please catch us wherever you get your podcasts. Like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. Give us a look, join our pages. If you got something to say, tell us. We'll get back to you. Tonight, we're going to do a little update on the Olympics. We'll go around the rest of the world of sports. Let's get it going. We'll start right off with the Olympics. Olympics almost over, guys. Goes fast. Once it starts, it kind of goes fast.
Yep.
At the moment, the medal count stands Norway at 33, Italy at 26, USA at 24, Japan 22, Germany 21, and then everybody else is lower than 21. Canada is at 14. We got hockey coming up. Kev, you want to talk to us a little bit about hockey? We'll start it off.
Yeah. We're recording this on Wednesday, so today was the quarterfinals. And, you know, first game wasn't that much to talk about. Slovakia beat Germany 6-2, pretty straightforward. Then we had three straight overtime games, which is wonderful hockey. Canada 4-3 over Czechia. Mitch Marner, with the heroic goal for Canada, avoided a national disaster up there.
One on three, got through and still got a backhand over the upper shoulder. Just an amazing goal.
And yeah. Kev, even before that, Czechia leads 3-2 with 3:27 left, and Suzuki scores to just tie the game. And I got news for you. Anybody that was a Canada fan was on the edge of their seats before that goal was scored, because they were pressing and Czechia was blocking everything. They were getting rid of the puck so well, and then it just broke down, and that was the end.
Yeah, the tying goal, there was a dump in, and only Suzuki was on the line. Everybody else had come off. He fought in the corner, kind of kept the puck alive a little bit longer. Then when it stayed in, he was able to get the deflection and the tying goal. It was huge. And the Czechs had been playing really good hockey, and they're really good players too. I mean, anytime you sit there with Pasternak out there and guys like that, I mean, the Czechs are no pushover. But you sat there at one moment, and I saw the Canadian power play, and I saw Celebrini with MacKinnon and McDavid with Makar and Reinhardt, and I was like, and you know, like Reinhardt's the weak link. You know, you could have thrown anybody. It could have been Horvat. It could have been anybody out there. That is the sickest power play I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it's amazing. I don't know. Canada's stacked, and Binnington made a couple of big saves, even though he had been struggling most of the year.
Yeah, and the big thing coming out of that game is Crosby's going for imaging on his injury. Not only does that affect Canada for the Olympics, who knows? Depending on what it is, could affect the Penguins. For the rest of the season. We'll see what happens after that. Reminds me, you know, last time the NHL played there was what, Tavares getting injured, I think, coming out of the Olympics for the Islanders.
Yep, absolutely.
All those years ago, 2012, I think that was the last time they played.
14, I think. It was 14, wasn't it?
14. Yep. Then the second game, we had Switzerland jumping out to a 2-0 first period lead over Finland, looking for the big upset there. Finland scores two in the third period, including a goal with a minute, just a minute over left. And then Arturi Lehkonen in overtime puts it away, and Finland was able to survive in advance.
Yeah, Niskanen ties it. Lehkonen wins it. Listen, again, the one thing I'll say, I didn't say it the first one, I hate this three-on-three format. I think it's such a lucky – I mean, the more talented team technically should win. I know Gino loves it because it's all exciting ice. No, it should be four-on-four if you want to make it fast. Three-on-three to me is too much. I don't enjoy this at all. G?
I hate it.
Oh, I thought you'd love it.
No. In fact, I actually texted Kev before you actually even said it on the text. I can't stand a three-on-three.
Ah, okay. I missed it.
Gino usually goes against us with these new things.
I hate the three-on-three. I mean, that's just the look of the draw. You win the face-off, you have a chance of scoring. I think one of the announcers actually said that.
So here's my only issue with this, and that is usually they do this so that way you can get a fast ending, right? You want the game to end faster.
Yep.
But it's not a 5 minute like the NHL. It's 10 minutes. So you're going to play 3-on-3 for why don't you play 5-on-5 for 10 minutes if for that point? It's not like, you know, if you're trying to shorten it, maybe I get it. I hate the 3-on-3 because the 3-on-3, there's such an element of luck involved with a missed pass. Something goes wrong. You know, you get a breakaway. I can't stand it.
Honestly, I can live with 4-on-4, G. I can't live with the 3-on-3.
Yeah, I may be able to live with 4-on-4, but just the fact that as we get to the next round, that could decide, the 3-on-3 period could decide who gets a medal is just totally ridiculous.
I agree wholeheartedly.
You want to do that in the first part of this before you get to the, you know, this round? Okay. I don't love it, but okay. But you get here, you're playing for medals now. You're really going to put it on a 3-on-3? I can't stand it, really.
What's even more fun is when it goes to a shootout to decide a medal.
But you know what, Kev? I get the shootout part of it because
I get it too.
You don't want these guys playing three overtime periods. So I get the shootout.
It'd be fun to watch, honestly, though.
No, Kev, and honestly, if you tell me after regulation you go right to a shootout, I'd be more okay with that than 3-on-3.
Yeah. 3-on-3 is not hockey.
It's not hockey.
It's wide open spaces. It's odd man rushes every single time with an open guy in the slot, and the goalie doesn't have much of a chance. No. You know, I don't love it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Then we get to the last game, Team USA.
We get to the main course.
Scoreless game halfway through, and Larkin puts the U.S. up 1-0. And then late in the third period, about a minute and a half left, after Sweden pulled the goalie, that son of a bitch, Zibanejad, scores. I hate the Rangers, in case you didn't know that.
But that was
even in the Olympics, Kev hates the Rangers.
Exactly. Well, so you should have heard me.
So JT Miller would have put one home. You would have been angry?
No, but when Trocheck takes a penalty that gives Sweden the power play in the third period, of course I'm pissed off at Trocheck too.
Yeah.
Of course. But, you know, I mean, that goal was not Hellebuyck. I mean, Hellebuyck had a great game.
He did.
He was terrific today.
He has not had a good regular season, but he has looked – he's been the best goalie in the Olympics. And there's been a lot of good goalie play. He's been the best. And Markstrom was matching him. Markstrom played great.
Oh, Markstrom was terrific, yeah. But then Quinn Hughes in overtime puts one away. Beautiful move. Brings it back to the forehand, puts it right past the glove, and sends the U.S. home – or sends the U.S. on to the next round, winning 2-1.
Yeah, taking on Slovakia. That was a – listen, the game was highly intense. Again, when you're holding on to a one-goal lead, they were having trouble solving Markstrom. I thought there were stretches where Sweden was the better team. I thought there were stretches where the U.S. was a better team. I thought it was a relatively even matchup. While Canada, the Czechs dominated the first period. The Canada seemed like they were the better team the last two. G?
So before today, I watched very little of this men's hockey up to today. And maybe it's partially because I knew the U.S. and Canada were going to get into the quarters at this point. I'll call it the medal round just for argument's sake. we knew those two would be two of the eight that were going to get in. So maybe it's because of that, but I get that they got to play those intro games to get to this round, and it matters for other teams like Sweden and Slovakia. And I get it, but I had no interest up until today. Now, today I watched everything. I saw a little of every game, so I'm into it again. But before today, like nothing. Darren? And
as of yesterday, I mean, why do all 12 teams get to advance?
Yeah.
can't the opening round kind of eliminate a few teams? If you take away four teams,
that's it.
You take away six teams, whatever you do, but at least make it so. Did anybody need to see Italy or France play again? No. I didn't watch them play.
After they're losing 10-2.
It's a great point.
Nobody wants to see that. Nobody wants to see that. And you know, so I mean, listen, Sweden as the seven was a surprise. That was
whole differential.
Slovakia beat Finland. Finland beat Sweden. Sweden beat Slovakia. They just kind of played round robin in that group. But at the same time, it's like, you know, the early rounds have to mean something. It was like all 12 teams make it to the next. You know, I don't know. I didn't agree with it. Nobody need to see Latvia again. Nobody need to see any of these teams again. Let's just get the top four, top six into the medal round and call it a day.
I did find it interesting that today we could have had Czechia against Switzerland and Slovakia against Sweden if those overtimes went differently. US would have been out, Finland would have been out, Canada would have been out. And you really would have had some Olympic chaos going on for the men's hockey, let me tell you.
The funny thing is, on social media, the Canadian fans talk a lot of crap about the Americans. So I catch myself rooting against Canada, not because I know most of the Canadian players. I don't dislike them, but I'm sitting there rooting against Kev's native land because I have a hard time, with these trash talkers. I'm like, you guys cheated at curling. Why are you talking smack about hockey? I mentioned the five guys on the line, on the power play. I mean, you should win.
Point of order. You can call it Kev's native land at any other time except for the Olympics. When it comes to the Olympics, it's all USA for Kev. Go ahead, Kev.
I don't know.
Except for when Bo Horvat scores for Team Canada.
It's going to kill you when that happens, by the way.
All right. Yep. So
we covered what's coming up now. So Friday is Canada, Finland, US, Slovakia. Saturday, the bronze medal game. Sunday, the gold medal game.
Listen, I'll be ready for the Sunday. I'll be looking forward to that.
You want to touch on women's? So the women's hockey. So
tomorrow, no one predicted this final at all. So this is exciting. No. Kev,
it was a shock.
Tomorrow is the semis, right, Kev?
No, tomorrow's the final. Tomorrow's the final.
Match. Tomorrow afternoon.
Oh, so U.S. versus Canada for the gold?
Yep.
And Switzerland, Sweden for the bronze?
Two other countries, yeah.
Okay. No, I'm just saying. That's how it is, right? Okay.
I mean, you know, the U.S. women, 5-1 over Czechia, where Czechia scored coming out of the penalty box off a shorthanded situation. Then they've gone 5-0, 5-0, 5-0, 6-0, and 5-0.
I mean, it's not giving up a goal since that Czechia. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah, they were playing without their captain Poulin, but you know, we'll see if that makes any difference tomorrow.
No, absolutely.
Okay. Any other Olympic points you guys want to touch on?
Well, we had some cheating in curling, Kev. Why don't you get into that?
Well, supposedly last week, I think it was against Switzerland, Canada. The Swiss lobbied or accused Canada of cheating. Cheating is you release a stone with the handle, but your hand's not supposed to touch the stone after you release it. And supposedly Canada's touching the stone.
With the finger. And I think it was Sweden, not Switzerland.
It was Sweden.
The yellow uniforms stand out to me. That's the only reason why.
Yeah. So they're having a shouting match. The Canadian guys, you know, cursing up a storm, everything else. I mean, it was like, this is a gentleman's sport.
I want to just jump in and tell you we have an upset alert in college basketball with 1:19 left. Creighton is up 10 on UConn. Go ahead, Kev. Sorry to interrupt.
No, that's okay. And then about 2 days later, the Canadian women were also accused of cheating as well. So, just you know, what's supposed to be a gentlemanly sport.
was supposed to be shuffleboard on ice with squeegees. Got a little bit dangerous. And I watched the American game a little bit today until they gave up four with the hammer on one throw. I was like, I'm out. Oh. Down 6-0 now. I never saw they had the whole middle. I never seen them throw it. I never seen anyone throw it right through there.
I watched 15 of the 17 matches.
I know. I had to turn it off. I had it on.
And it's like, there's pressure. There's four English stones in the house. And it's a simple draw to the button. Through. I mean, the most basic shot in curling.
It went from 2-0 thinking you're going to go 2-1 to 6-0. I was like, oh, out.
Yep.
Mikaela Shiffrin, after a long drought, wins the slalom, wins it relatively easily. You're sitting there watching the end. She's up a minute and a half saying, just don't fall. And she didn't, or miss a gate. And she didn't, which was pretty cool.
So she became the youngest ever to win the slalom at age 18.
Yep.
Back in 2014. And now she's the oldest American to win the slalom event in the Olympics.
It's amazing stuff. Jordan Stoltz won the 500 and the 1,000. We talked about him before the Olympics started as a guy that could win both. First guy since Heiden to win that. So Eric Heiden, 1980. I remember it vividly, even though I don't remember the races. I was 8. But I remember it vividly anyway. But that was awesome. But another guy I told you that was going to fly through, Ilya Milinen, fell twice in the free skate, in the final skate, the long program, whatever you want to call it now. Yep. Finished 8th and then had some really depressing kind of tweets afterwards where you just hope that the kid's all right mentally. He did get the gold in the team, but he was a guy that everybody expected great things from.
Hey, you know what? The interview right afterwards, I blew it. Yeah. Thank you for just saying the obvious. You know, you didn't try to sugarcoat it, didn't make excuses. He said, I blew it.
And you know what? He's the best in the world. He just had a bad event, bad time of it. What are you going to do? The monobob, we won the gold. The oldest Olympian, 41-year-old Elena Myers Taylor, takes the gold. We also got the bronze in that one, or the one-man bobsled. But we're going to go with monobob. One of the most interesting things I saw, Kev, yesterday was the two-man men's bobsled where Germany finished first, second, and third. I was like, wow, they must be really good at this freaking bobsled thing. Elena Myers Taylor, Kev, I mean, it's a nice story for her.
Great story. 5 other medals in 4 previous Olympics. This was her first gold. And, when you watch NBC's coverage, they do the story. She's got 2 young kids, both because of some genetic mutation, both born deaf.
Yep.
The oldest with Down syndrome. I mean, the fact that she's able to overcome this and become a gold medalist, too, along with everything else going on in her life. I mean, what a story.
No, it's amazing. Liz Lemley also won a gold with the freestyle skiing, women's moguls. She won a bronze also in the dual moguls, whatever the hell that's all about. I don't understand all the sports, but I'm learning the alpine slalom stuff. not the alpine, the free skating stuff, free skiing stuff. Sorry, G, what's up?
I do find it amazing. I'm thankful that this hasn't happened, but between all of the sledding stuff, the bobsled, the luge, the skeleton, they're going so fast. I am so thankful that there are not more accidents.
Well, there was a death not that long ago. I mean, it happens.
Right. But when you're coming down on a one man freaking skeleton where your head first is, I don't know. They're showing the speed and he's going 72 miles an hour. That must feel like you're going 120. Okay.
And you're trying to steer something without being able to look. I don't get it. I mean, there's certain things I look at, like the downhill skiing freaks me out. The ski jumping, I'm like, I wouldn't even release myself to go down that thing with no sides. There's no sides. There's no sides. You're just going down this thing like whatever. I don't get it. The bobsled, the luge, all these things are amazing. And that's what makes the winter kind of fun because these are sports we don't get to watch. Like the curling, like you said, Kev. Yep. It's just fun stuff. Gee.
And you mentioned the downhill. They are flying down that hill.
God.
And they are stopping on a dime to make a turn at a 67-degree angle.
Don't they know Sonny Bono died doing that just like regular? What the hell's going on down here? Yeah. It's freaking crazy. We had a bunch of also, bronzes and silvers and stuff like that, which were great. But, those were the golds that we've had so far. in the last week anyway. And, you know, listen, we're hoping for the hockey. What do you got, Kev?
Yeah, two other more like trivia type questions or answers. Norway's Johannes Klebo.
Oh, he's amazing.
Yeah. Nordic skiing. He wins his 10th gold today in a team pursuit or team relay type event. Only the second individual ever with 10 golds in the Olympics. The only other one? Winter or summer? Michael Phelps.
You got to remember, Klebo is the guy that runs the 6-minute mile on skis uphill.
Yeah.
That was what you commented about last week.
I just don't know what else to say about it. It's. If this guy's not the greatest athlete in the Olympics right now, I don't know who is because
I was do that. I was watching it the same time as you when he did that, where everybody is moving, and then all of a sudden he decides to run uphill on the skis and opens up this lead that is just unbelievable.
I've never seen anything like it.
Kev? Yep.
And one other trivia question, you know, a couple of years when somebody asked you who the oldest Olympian American in for Winter Olympics, Rich Ruohonen. Last week for curling, he got in when they were losing 8-3. They let him sub. He threw two stones. He becomes the oldest American Winter Olympian. Well,
congratulations to Rich. That's awesome. Whatever small northern town he's from, I'm sure is going crazy that he got to throw a stone.
Like Minnesota.
He's somewhere in Minnesota.
They're all from like Duluth.
You know, all those guys are from Minnesota. Now, listen.
Except for the U.S. skip, who is from the Ardsley Curling Club here in New York.
See? Does it get any better than that?
I told my son, all right, you're 14. You should take up curling. Maybe in 12 years you can make the
You'll be our first Olympian, Olympics. Aiden, you're the Olympian in this family. You may not be the best athlete. That's going to go to Allie, but you're going to be the Olympian.
That's right. Sorry, Kev.
Kev, we're counting you out. Anyway.
All right. Any other Olympics before we move on, guys?
No, just rooting for the U.S. Both men's and women's hockey. That's the exciting stuff left.
All right. Let's move over to some college basketball. Darren?
Yeah. So it's starting to get really, really interesting. And again, if you're watching it all, we've talked about a lot of the top teams. Right now, if you were going to say who's the best team in the country, Michigan would be the team you'd lean toward just because of the amount of blowouts. Florida's getting really hot right now, is probably the best team in the SEC, even though they got off to the slow start. Arizona had lost a couple games. They're still great. Every big game in the Big 12 seems like it's a Final Four matchup. Here are the rankings right now. So Michigan is the one. Houston is the two, and they did lose earlier this week. Duke is the three. They play Michigan in Washington, D.C. on Saturday. If you want to watch a late season, at a conference, neutral site game, Duke, Michigan in D.C. Arizona's the four. They've lost two in a row, but nothing to be ashamed of in the losses they have. UConn's the five, and you're telling me they're down right now, right, G?
They are down 10 with 41 seconds left.
That's crazy. Iowa State, the six. You know, another great team right now. Purdue, seven, playing real well. Then they lost to Michigan at home. Eight, Kansas. Got blown out last time out, but they're a good team. Nebraska lost their last time out. They're ninth. Illinois, 10. Gonzaga, 11. Florida, 12. I want to tell you a little bit about Texas Tech basketball. You know what I'm going to tell you? That their best player in their shot at 13 tore his ACL. It's devastating, actually, if you like Texas Tech basketball. Matt McCausland came out and made the announcement today. JT Toppin, who's their all-everything. The kid's averaging 22 and 11. Does everything right. Their only losses were quad ones. You know, they did everything right, but they lost their best player, and he's going to be an impossible guy to replace. But, I mean, listen, they got play. Christian Anderson's an elite point guard, all right? He averages 19 and 8, basically, assists per game. Atwell and Petty can stroke the three. Lawan Watts is better than people realize because Toppin gets all the credit, but Watts can bang down low and help them out. This team defends the three great. They're a good defensive squad overall. Teams only shoot 31% from three. Biggest deficiency before the Toppin injury was they're okay from the line. They're not great, only 71% from the line. But as a team, it sounds okay, but it's because Toppin was 56% and everybody else is like 77 and up. So they're going to be much better than that. They don't have a ton of depth, and the loss of Toppin hurts that, but they compete hard. They play everybody tough. Texas Tech, even though the loss of Toppin makes it seem like they can't be a Final Four team, is still a team that can make the second weekend without him. They have enough talent going forward. So that's what you want to notice when you're looking at a team like that. Virginia 14, who G covered a couple weeks ago, they had a big win at Ohio State. Another out-of-conference ACC Big Ten matchup on Saturday. 15, Michigan State. North Carolina 16. St. John 17, G. We had a little brawl this week, no?
Yeah, so they had a road victory against Providence on Saturday. They moved to 13-1 in the Big East, 20-5 overall. It all started with Providence's Duncan Powell committed a hard foul early in the second half.
Dirty play.
On Bryce Hopkins.
Oh, yeah.
Chaos ensued. Hopkins immediately went after Powell. Both benches spilled onto the court. It took officials and security guards almost 5 minutes to break up the spill. And then the officials paused the game for almost 19 minutes so they could review the footage and issue appropriate punishments after the brawl. So in the end, six players received ejections, four from St. John's, two from Providence. It included St. John's Dylan Mitchell and three bench players. For Providence, it included Powell and their leading scorer, Jalen Sellers.
Yep.
And then later in the second half, Providence forward Jameer Jones was immediately ejected after he pushed Hopkins while he was driving to the basket. Go ahead, Darren.
Well, no, the thing is, Hopkins was a Providence guy, so he played at Providence. Yep. This is like a little bit of a bad blood, but he never played with the guys that fouled him. So it was kind of an interesting thing. And the student section for Providence acted a little bit immature. They didn't help the scene. Mm-hmm. Yep. I don't know. It was really just one of the dirtier plays you'll see in college basketball.
Yeah.
I thought it was a
very dirty play, to be honest.
And then he's flexing for the crowd afterwards. He was trying to rev them up. Kim English has to be somewhat embarrassed by this because he did not have his team ready to play. Ready to play like men, I should say. Yep. You know, he had no control over those guys.
St. John's will have Marquette later tonight. Marquette is 9-17 on the season. I'm expecting St. John's to come out and play well. They should move to 21-5 after today. I think Pitino's got them in the right frame. They're going to have a game before the Big East tournament starts against Connecticut coming up in a week and a half. That's going to be big. And then we're going to see where they actually wind up with the Big East tournament. I said it before. They're definitely a top four seed. Are they a top three seed? I'm not sure. We're going to see how they play down the stretch. A couple of wins against Connecticut. They win the Big East tournament. They could be. But I think at this point, they're definitely one of the top 16 teams in the country. I'm expecting a four seed, could be higher. We'll see how this goes. Darren?
Absolutely. And listen, the thing about they also get Nova, who's playing a lot better.
They're playing a lot better.
Yeah, so Nova's playing real, real well. I'm going to go right back to you because the 18th team in the country is St. Louis, a team that you've been looking at a little bit, G. So tell us about the A-10s Billikens. What's going on with St. Louis, besides the loss last night? What's going on with them?
So they're putting together a really great season. Even after last night's 81-76 loss at Rhode Island, it was only their second of the year. So they're 24-2 overall. They're 12-1 in the Atlantic 10. They're currently ranked 18. They have a net of 22, and we're going to come back to that in 2 seconds. They're fourth in Division One with a 90.8 points per game and 32nd in defense with 67.3 points per game. That becomes important in a couple of minutes.
Okay.
They lead the nation in effective field goal percentage at 61.1, and they rank second nationally in three-point percentage at 41.4. So they're going to put points up on the board against anybody. They're led by Robbie Avila, the center. They call him the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, which I thought was kind of funny.
He's a little chubby, too. He's like this chubby 6'10 kid.
Yeah.
His goggles, the whole thing.
They also have three guards. Trey Green is a sharpshooter, 12 points per game. They're currently projected, if you go by all these rankings, as a 6-8 seed. If they win the 8-10, they could climb a little higher, but that's probably where they are. So here you go. So This is a very good team. Do they deserve a net rating that low is the question I've been looking at the last week. And here you go. So the net often punishes teams with a high winning percentage if they haven't faced elite competition. That doesn't come into play for them because they really haven't played anybody. Okay. So although they've been winning, they have a non-conference strength of schedule, Darren, of 317.
Yes, they haven't played anyone.
All right. They've played nobody. They have only played, they only have two quad one wins, and it's Santa Clara and VCU. And half of their wins, 10 wins, are against quadrant four teams. Okay. They also have a win against a non-division one opponent where they won 114-33. All right. So why is their net so low? And here it is, because the net is influenced by margin of victory and efficiency.
It is.
Okay. So even though they are not playing anybody, when they win the game by 50, the net takes it into account and moves them up. Do I think they deserve that low of a net? No. Okay. Are they clearly one of the best teams in the A-10? Yes. They're going to put 90 up on just about anybody in the country. Okay. I'm not talking about a top 10 team, but anybody else, they're probably putting 90 points on the board. A lot of days, that's going to give you a win, even against some of the better teams. So I do think they're good. I just don't think they're that good. And the net that they have right now, for me, is very undeserved. I'm going to investigate them a little bit more before we get to the tournament, because the factor that everybody seems to be looking at now is the WAB, which is wins above bubble. I'm going to dig
now in. Now you're sort of talking like Kev.
I'm going to dig in a little bit deeper and see what that's going to bring up. But that's a little bit about St. Louis as we are right now.
They lost yesterday. Next game is a home game, but it's VCU. This is the other toughest game on the schedule for these guys. Maybe so, at George Mason, the end of the season would be the only other tough one.
So they got VCU with, and here you go, with a net of about 46. Then Dayton with a net of around 89-ish. The next game after that is Duquesne with a net of about 126. Then Loyola Chicago, which their net is ridiculously, it's completely off the charts. And then the last game, as you said, is George Mason. Their net's about 90 right now. So they really only have one game against a team, and it's the next one against VCU on Friday. So
yeah, we'll see how that one. So we'll see what happens. Well, Kev hates the SEC, but he was going to talk to us a little bit about Vandy, who's the 19th team in the country. So why don't you give us a little bit of an update on probably the best team no one's talking about at all.
Best team, but, you know, another team that, you know, the net ranking, I question in some ways. 21-4 overall, 8-4 in the conference. So they're 13-0 outside of the conference. They're not conference wins. The best ones, UCF, VCU, St. Mary's, SMU. Not exactly a killer lineup of non-conference if those were your four best.
Agreed.
In the conference, they're 8-4. They've beaten Alabama. They've beaten Kentucky. They've beaten Texas A&M. Those were their best three wins. Only one of them was ranked, Alabama. They've lost. They lost three in a row in the middle of there. They lost at Texas, home from Florida, at Arkansas. So that was their little bump in the road there. They've bounced back since. They've won 5 out of 6. Their loss was at home to Oklahoma. You know, the net gives them 7-3 quad one, 6-1 quad two. So nothing outside quad two losses. But again, I don't know how they were 13 net.
Yeah. It's the net the net's as bad as the RPI and the BPI. They all suck.
So, you know, this is a team that likes to push the pace. Most of their possessions are under 16 seconds when they get up there and shoot. So very, very fast pace, high possessions, quick tempo, 46 in the country and 3 points per game taken. But they also provide defensive pressure. I mean, they've got their top 40 in steals per game. Their backcourt, Tyler Tanner and Duke Miles are both terrific players. Tanner's averaging 18 and 5.5 assists and 2.5 steals. And Miles is averaging 16 and a half with 4 assists and almost 3 steals a game. So that's where they generate the pressure. They get enough up front with Tyler Nickel and Devin McLaughlin. They go about 7 or 8 deep, rotate the guys in through to keep that pressure up and that pace up. And, you know, when you watch a Vandy game, you always know you're in Vandy because they play on that elevated floor with the benches on the baselines and
below. They play the volleyball court.
And if you're a certain age, you know the best name on that team. They have a freshman forward, Chandler Bing. If you're a certain age, that makes funny. That's funny.
Might be a friend of you. Might be a friend
of yours. I have no idea who Chandler Bing would be.
Exactly. 20 is Arkansas, another team that plays these low-scoring games. They're right now in a 105-105 overtime game against Alabama. 21 is Louisville. I'm going to touch on. They lost last night. This team, 19-7, 8-5. They've won 7 of their last 9. The only 2 losses was last night at SMU in a game SMU needed desperately. It was a really close game to like the last minute and a half. And they got blown out of Duke, which happens a lot. This team likes to push it, you know. Pat Kelsey likes to run it up. He was the old Charleston coach, went over to Louisville. They play a 4-guard offense led by Ryan Conwell and Michael Brown Jr. They average 19 and 18 respectively. Throw in Isaac McNeely, who shoots the lights out, and Javon Hadley also strokes the 3 well. This team, they shoot free throws well. They share the ball great. But despite being small, they rebound well. They do a real solid job on the glass. They turn the ball over a little bit, but they also force turnover, so it almost matches each other out. For this team, their competitiveness is going to be if they can take good shots, because they have a tendency to get themselves into this run-and-gun game and take ill-advised shots. No, yes, or no, bench him. It's always that type of thing with a 3 off balance for no reason whatsoever with this team. Again, this is a strong team in the heart of the ACC. Not one of the top teams in the ACC, probably mid-pack. They can do damage, and no one's going to want to play them because of the pace that they play when they get to the tournament. 22 is Miami over Ohio, Kev. And now there's only one team in the country that hasn't lost yet, and you're talking about them tonight.
And that would be the Redhawks of the University of Miami at Ohio. Unbeaten, but who have they beaten?
Absolutely nobody. They make St. Louis look like they had a tough sketch.
They've yet to play one game. They're 1-0 against Quad 2, 22-0 against Quads 3 and 4, and 3-0 against non-Division 1 opponents. Oh. And yet their net ranking is 49th.
They are not your Uncle Wally Serbiak's Miami of Ohio.
They certainly are not. They lead the nation in scoring 92.3 points per game. They've got 7 guys averaging 9.9 or more. 40% from 3 as a team. Over 50% from the field. This is a team that can shoot the ball. And if you get into the tournament time, if they get hot from 3 in a given game, they can cause some havoc. Very guard-oriented. Peter Suter leads the team with 14.8 points a game. Luke Scalger leads the team with about 5 assists a game, averaging 10 points. And they go big guards more than big forwards. You know, they've got 6'6 guard Ellen Elmer, who's averaging 12 points and leads a team with 6 rebounds a game. And then 6'8 guard Brent Myers at 14, almost 15 points a game. So very guard oriented. Not a lot of bigs per se. You know, their bigs are more the guards. They want the length at guard. But like I said, they can chuck up the 3. They hit high percentage. They go up and down the court. And averaging 92 points a game against a nothing schedule. They're going to be a very interesting team to watch in the tournament.
That's going to be about who they get placed against. That's going to be who the matchup they play. If they're going up against a team that's really, really big, they're going to struggle.
Yeah.
if they get a matchup where it's not going to be a size team, you never know what could happen. 23rd, the Storm and Mormons. Gino, tell us a little bit about BYU.
They're currently 19-6, which sounds great. And then you get to their Big 12 record of 7-5. Second year coach Kevin Young has them playing well, but they only have one big win. It's against Wisconsin. They have a lot of losses. They're going to need to learn to get some of these wins. They got losses against Connecticut, at Texas Tech, against Arizona, who they're playing tonight. at Kansas. They have a loss against Houston. These are all big teams in the Big 12. Don't get me wrong. This team is defined by A.J. DeBanza, 6'9", jumbo wing, consensus number one overall pick at the moment in the draft. He averages 24.4 points per game. He's got a 53.6 field goal percentage. He averages 6 rebounds a game. But at the moment, they're a mix of high NBA talent. They have veteran leadership, but now they're going to have to find a way to replace guard Richie Saunders, who went down with the season-ending injury Saturday versus Colorado. Him and his 18 points per game needs to be replaced. How well they replace him, how well DeBanza plays against these bigger teams, is going to really determine how far they go in the tournament. They're good enough to be in the tournament. They're good enough to be in the, you know, top six teams of the Big 12, but they still have a brutal schedule ahead of them. So they're 7-5. Tonight they play at Arizona. They still have Iowa State on their schedule. They still have Texas Tech on their schedule. Texas Tech may be a little easier now, but still, they're going to be a tough matchup. So we're going to see how well their record is within the Big 12 when we get down to the tournament. But listen, they're a good team. The Bantz is going to give them a lot of offense, so we're going to see how far they go. Darren, any comments about him?
Well, the one thing about DeBanza that I like so much, DeBanza, he plays a mid-range game.
Yeah.
The lost mid-range game. He likes getting into the paint and turning around from 15-17. Likes getting to the baseline, doing that too. He still shoots the three, don't get me wrong. He's a full all-around guy, but he can play the mid-range game. I feel like I'm watching the NBA in the 90s. I'm all excited about it. 24 seed is Wisconsin, who's jumped up. Had a tough loss the other night. Then 25 Alabama, who's been hovering around that 25 pretty much for the last few weeks. Others that got votes were Clemson, Utah State, Tennessee, Nova, Kentucky, Miami, Florida, St. Mary's, and VCU. Bunch of big games last week. I mean, as we're going through them, starting last Friday night, Wisconsin blew out Michigan State. Huge statement win for Wisconsin as they got into the rankings. Michigan State was never in this game. They were down 17 at the half, never anything. Then Saturday comes around, and Michigan blows out bubble team UCLA. G?
17 games on Saturday of top 25 teams.
Mm-hmm.
No upsets.
Not a one.
Not one. 17 games and not one upset.
We got a couple of our earlier part this week.
Well,
Michigan
go ahead.
Blew out UCLA by 30. And then they won at Purdue earlier this week. UCLA also got crushed at Michigan State. UCLA had a bad weekend. We're going to touch on Mick Cronin in a few minutes. Duke held off Clemson, who now has lost 3 in a row. They lost to Wake tonight. At Wake, they lost by 10. Iowa State crushed Kansas. Biggest blowout win in this series for the Cyclones against Kansas since 1973. I know you were watching, Gino. We were almost too. St. John's beat up Providence. We touched on that. Vandy beat Texas A&M. A&M was leading this conference. Now they're a bubble team. Yeah. Now we got to find out what they're going to do. Florida beat Kentucky by 9. Then they beat South Carolina. Sorry, Kev.
Ugh.
Purdue.
Everybody can beat South Carolina.
Michigan. South Carolina's men's basketball team is not a bad team. They're just in the wrong conference right now. You know, they just don't have the talent there. All the money goes to football. UConn held off Georgetown in a really tight game. So you say, oh, okay, they'll blow out Creighton. They didn't. They got beat tonight. Virginia won at Ohio State, which would have given Ohio State their first quad one win. They were 0-8 going in. But then they won against Wisconsin the other night. So now they're 1-9, I believe, overall against the quad one. They finally got the monkey off their back. Gonzaga, Geno's squad, they held off Santa Clara. That was a big game for them. Illinois crushed Indiana, but I think Indiana's still on the right side of the bubble, but they got to keep playing well. Iowa State, Houston. You watch these Big 12 games, it's like watching a Final Four game when you get the right teams in the right matchups. And you don't like going – no one wants to go to Hilton. Hilton's a tough place. It's like the fog. Magical things happen in that place. The Hilton magic happened again. Iowa State outlasted Houston. Geno was all over. He sends me a text at like 11:20. I'm watching it in bed. I'm like, Geno's all in. I'm like, holy shit, whatever. NC State routed North Carolina, but before you celebrate it too much – They were missing their two best players, Carolina, in this one. I've talked about SMU getting the much-needed win at Louisville to stay on the bubble for them. UCF beat TCU is in a battle of Big 12 teams that are fighting to get into the tournament. Rhode Island knocked off St. Louis. We talked about it. Georgia wins at Rupp. Georgia was kind of falling back. That win kind of propels them back where they're not really bubble talk just yet. VCU crushed GW. VCU's a team that can sneak in and get an at-large in this if they make it to the final. So just keep your eyes out. I know you hate the conference, but what? Yes, Gino, go ahead.
Their net is very suspicious too, by the way.
Side note. They're blowing out the weak team to the A-10. They beat Sisters of the Poor by 60 the other night. Iowa beats Nebraska in a great game if you like defense, 57-52. G?
Is that a signature win for Iowa now?
Yeah, Iowa, I think, was on the right side of the bubble going in.
So do I.
This kind of propels them. It's never easy to win in Iowa City, so that was a big win. We'll see what happens with that. Texas needed the game last night, held on against LSU. That was important for them. Another interesting one last night, Grand Canyon goes into San Diego State and wins. So now San Diego State, who was the clear two, gets a home loss. So that's, I don't know how big the Mountain West is going to be. They never win in the tournament anyway. They get four or five teams. They all lose in the first freaking round. Utah State will be there again, and they'll get beat by someone they should beat.
For some reason,
I kept them every year, too. You love them, though, Kev, usually. And then finally, last night, Arizona State upset Texas Tech. Topped hurt the knee. Couple of quick points, though. Go first before I go to mine.
So Saturday, I mentioned 17 games, no upsets. Mm-hmm. And then last night, 6 upsets happened.
Yeah, exactly. It was
okay. So I said it against Iowa. North Carolina State beats UNC. Is that their signature win?
Well, UNC is missing their two leading scorers in that game. So I'm not going to give them that yet. Even though I think NC State's good and Will Wade's a hell of a coach when he's not cheating.
Okay, and Iowa State, I'm going to say the same thing. They beat number 24, Wisconsin. Is that their signature win now?
It is, but the problem is they're 1-8. I'm sorry, it's not 1-9. 1-8 against quad ones. So they're going to have to get one more probably. Probably one more quad one to have a real realistic shot, in my opinion. I don't know what you think, Kev.
I think they're going to get 10. I think they're still in pretty good shape.
I think
they're right there. I think that win really helps them, to be honest.
Right now, I probably have them in the first four games.
Yep.
Well,
last four in.
Kev? When I look at the last couple of teams in the Big Ten to get in, I'm looking at Ohio State, USC, UCLA. You look at it, and now Ohio State's got this big win on their resume.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, for me, that was the one thing that happened yesterday with that.
Yeah, I mean, no, I think you're right about that. There's a lot of excitement going on. Next week we start bubble watch, boys. So we start just going into the conferences and see who's on the bubble. Yep. Bubble watch is always fun. Big games left this week, even tonight. Vandy at Missouri. Missouri needs this one tonight. They're home. This is a game they have to have. Illinois at USC. USC needs that signature win, just like the one you were talking about. They're right there with Ohio State in the same vein. Tomorrow we get VCU St. Louis. Gino's going to be watching this game. I know it. Indiana at Purdue.
You're right.
Indiana Purdue. Indiana can't afford to get blown out. They got to be competitive against Purdue. Saturday, Zona Houston followed by Michigan Duke. If there's a better doubleheader, this is a Final Four. This is like watching the Final Four on a Saturday. I'm not exaggerating. Yeah. This is as good as it gets.
Yeah.
You got UConn at Nova this weekend. UConn's going to have to bounce back. You've got Miami at Virginia. Both teams are in pretty good shape now. Miami's been continually winning, but they can't afford the blow up. Iowa State at BYU. This is another opportunity for BYU to get that signature win. Illinois at UCLA. This is an opportunity for UCLA to get a signature win. They have one against Purdue. They'll need another one. So there's a lot going on. Tennessee and Vandy being the other one. I think both teams are safe, but you just never know. Sunday, we get Ohio State and Michigan State. Another one where Ohio State could use it. Iowa and Wisconsin, two good teams. I think they're both fine. Monday, Houston at Kansas, because every Monday night in the Big 12 is something ridiculous. And then NC State at Virginia next Tuesday. So there's a lot going on with college basketball. Three quick points before we move on from it, though. Two quick points, I should say. Jerome Tang let go by Kansas State. Jerome Tang had a press conference last week where he ripped into his team saying a lot of them didn't deserve to wear the jersey. Kansas State fires him with cause.
Yeah.
You know what? He didn't win enough games. He got to the Elite Eight. Right, Kev? He got to the Elite Eight his first year. Hasn't won a lot since. You want to fire him, fire him. There's no cause there. He didn't curse. He didn't do anything bad. He just said his team didn't play hard and didn't deserve to wear the uniform anymore, and a lot of them wouldn't be back. Little did he know that he wouldn't be back.
Yeah.
The other one was last night, Mick Cronin. In an interesting Mick Cronin moment, as they always are. Late in the game, and they got blown out by Michigan. Then they got blown, and that game was 2 points at the half, and Michigan just pulled away in the second half. And then they got blown out at Michigan State in the first half. Late in the game, Jemerson comes in and commits a hard foul from behind, a flagrant one. Cronin doesn't like it. Throws his own player out. Embarrasses him on the court. Throws him off. There's less than a minute left in the game. It wasn't that egregious a foul to me. I thought Mick overreacted dramatically, probably because he was fed up of losing these games where he needs to be competitive. But I've never seen a player, a coach, try to embarrass his own player like that on the court, Kev. Something new for me.
Yeah, totally new for me, too. I mean, I was shocked that he did it. Like you said, it wasn't like it was – it wasn't
Providence.
You know, yeah. It wasn't quite to that level. You know, it was just – like I said, just shocking that he ejected his own player.
Yeah, I was shocked, too, I have to tell you.
I mean, so that's kind of where we are with in the scene of college basketball. Those two things happen. Guys, the season's getting exciting again. We're bubble watch next week. We're going to tell you who we think is going to be in or who's going to be close, and we'll get to it then. But right now I'm going to pass it back to you, Jay, as we finish with the long elongated college basketball recap.
All right. We'll move over to NBA. They're at the All-Star break. I won't say halfway because it's a little bit more than halfway, but Kev. Let's talk a little NBA.
Yeah, you know, the All-Star weekend, I think the most exciting NBA news come out of All-Star weekend was the fact that the number 45 car in NASCAR wins the Daytona 500, co-owned by Michael Jordan. If anybody watched the NBA All-Star game, kudos to them. Stars versus Stripes versus the World and this and that. I have no idea who played.
I didn't watch the weekend for a second. I didn't. I saw Damian Lillard won the 3-point contest. I don't even know who won the slam dunk.
But you know, I think we want to just, you know, coming out of the All-Star break, you know, we really haven't talked NBA much this year. And I think we would just want to give you a quick overview of what's going on there. And we'll start locally. We'll start with the Knicks. They're sitting there 35-20, third in the Eastern Conference, just a half game behind Boston for second. You know, their season's really split up in three sections here. Started off 23-9. Just coasting along, nothing going on, you know, just playing good basketball. Then they lost 9 out of 11, and they bounced back to win 10 out of 12. The difference? Well, you take a look at that 11-game stretch where they lost 9. They gave up 117 points per game in that stretch, and no game fewer than 106. So their defense just disappeared for that stretch. Since then, they've won 10 out of 12. They're giving up an average of 101, I mean, 16 points a game less. And they've only had four games giving up even more than 106, and two of them went into overtime, one went into double overtime. So the whole thing with this team comes down to defense. You know they've got the offense. You know they've got Brunson. Cat, who puts up probably the quietest 20-12. You know, OG, Bridges, Hart, they'll take turns, you know, chipping in with the offense as needed. At the deadline, they made the trade for Alvarado, who's basically replacing McBride, who's out probably for the rest of the year. Just gives Brunson that extra ball handler to help him out. And the wild card
pickup for them. Actually, I think I like the pickup of Alvarado.
Yeah, and the wild card is probably Mitch Robinson. I mean, you'd love to have him on the court late in the games. 9 rebounds a game in under 20 minutes of action per game. I mean, his rebound rate is incredible. But he shoots 41% from the foul line. You can't have him in the game late. Otherwise, you'll do Hakimich, if we want to call it that.
Problem.
But, you know, as long as they – you know they're going to score. As long as the defense keeps up the way they've been going the last 12 games, East is wide open. They've got as good a chance as anybody making it out of the Eastern Conference.
No doubt about it.
Jalen Brunson right now is averaging 6 assists a game.
Yep.
I'd like to see it get up a little bit more. I'd like him
8.
Yeah, could there be 2 baskets a game that he doesn't try and he passes off to somebody? Like, I'd like to see it get up to about 8-ish. 9 a game seems to be where he should be because he has the ball in his hand so much. You know, to me, six is really low when you having the ball in your hand for so much of the offensive possession. So that's my only.
I agree with you there. Yep.
Yeah.
She had the ball.
And then Darren, you've got the other local team.
Well, the Nets are very exciting. They're 15-38. There's a lot to talk about here. Michael Porter Jr. is the guy. Averages 25 points a game. This team has like 80 draft picks over the next 5 years. They're going to sit there and just try to be competitive, stay young. The interesting guy on this team is a guy like Nick Claxton, who leads the team in both rebounding and assists. But he's also like your big man. He's your center. I mean, and assists is four assists a game if you think the Knicks are bad with six. You know, they haven't been able to figure out a real rotation on this team much. Yeah. It's been the Michael Porter show. They released Cam Thomas, who was their second leading scorer because just not really a good team guy. Demmon's been nice as a rookie. He's coming on. Want to see a little bit more Danny Wolf, and we've been seeing him a little bit. Zaire Williams is a nice player. I mean, they got Nolan Traore starting to play more. There's a lot of things going on with the Nets. For what's going to happen with them, it's going to be the development of the young guys and the first-round draft picks. And by the way, this draft is going to be stacked.
Yeah.
This is going to be a great draft. They're all freshmen. They're all going to be amazing. And the Nets should come away with some legitimate help this year. So we'll see what happens. Not a lot to talk about with them. They're just not that good.
Yeah, so we told
us about the East, though, Kev.
So the rest of the East. So Detroit leads it. And I think surprising to most people, they actually lead OKC by half a game for best record in the NBA.
Yep.
Two young superstars here. Kate Cunningham is really making that leap to the next level, averaging 25 a game, almost 9.5 assists, 5.5 rebounds. I mean, he does everything for that team. They've got the help inside. Jalen Duran has almost 18 points and 10.5 rebounds per game. This team doesn't shoot threes, though. They're 28th in the league in 3 points attempted per game. They picked up Kevin Huerter at the deadline to try to help that out a little bit. But I think that with them, it's going to be, can they overcome the youth? Because they just don't have a lot of veterans in that rotation right now. Exposed them a little bit last year. Let's see how they do this year. Can they make that step up, or are they still a year away?
Mm-hmm.
Sitting in second is Boston. Again, another surprise team there without Jason Tatum. He may be back late in the season, maybe in time for the playoffs. Jaylen Brown really stepped up in his absence, averaging 29 a game, 7 rebounds, almost 5 assists. Backcourt help, Derek White, Peyton Pritchard, both averaging about 17 and 5.5 assists per game. A little light in the front court. Nemes Queta's been doing a good job up front there. Almost 10 points, 8 rebounds. And they acquired Nikola Vucevic to try to help out the depth there. They live and die by the three. If it's not dropping, they're done.
Mm-hmm.
Fourth in the conference, right behind the Knicks, is Cleveland. They've won 10 out of 11. They live and die with Donovan Mitchell, 29 points, 6 assists, 4.5 rebounds. They shook up the backcourt. They traded Darius Garland for James Harden at the deadline. Also added Keon Ellis and Dennis Schroeder. Their bigs, you've got Evan Mobley and Jared Allen. I think this might be one of the more balanced teams in the conference. You know they've been there. I think this is a team to watch out for. They could surprise, especially if it's something like Detroit, Cleveland in that second round, if the seats hold as they are right now. Cleveland's got to give Detroit a hell of a run there.
Sure they are. I agree with you.
Toronto, young team. Brandon Ingram, the veteran of the group at 28 years old. He averages 22 to lead the team. There are other best players, Scottie Barnes, R.J. Barrett, Emmanuel Quickley, double best Knicks there. They're all in their 20s. You know, except for Jakob Poeltl, who's in the rotation at 30 years old. Everybody else is in their 20s. And, again, I think they're just a little young. I don't think they're going to be able to compete. The wild card in here is Philadelphia. I mean, they've got the star player in Tyrese Maxey averaging 29 a game. Is Joel Embiid healthy? You know, he's only played 31 games this year. His usual stuff, he's out with shin and knee problems already coming out of the break. When he's healthy, 26 points, 7.5 rebounds. But again, it's his health. If he's not healthy, then Philly's got no chance. Then you come down to Orlando. You know, good young team with guys like Paolo Banchero, Desmond Bain, Franz Wagner, who's out right now with ankle injuries. Miami, you look at their best players, Norman Powell, Tyler Herro, Bam Adebayo. Do you really want to watch Miami? And then you got Charlotte, Atlanta, Chicago, and Milwaukee probably fighting for that play-in spot, or the last two play-in spots. So that's a quick overview of the East. And again, you know, I think given all that, I think the Knicks have as good a chance as any of the top four, really. I think it's really the top four. One of those is going to come out of the Eastern Conference.
Gotcha.
And Darren, I think you have some East Coast to Western Conference to talk about.
Yeah, OKC's on top. Started off 24-1. They've been kind of, I wouldn't say pedestrian since, but they've been, they got caught. They got caught by Detroit. San Antonio's right there. It's a race. SGA's the guy. He's hurt right now. But when he gets going, he's unstoppable. Guy averages 31.8 points a game. Got Holmgren, Jalen Williams. This team is great defensively. You look at the defensive metrics. They're the best in the NBA and field goal percentage at plus or whatever the hell that means. But they're really, really good at that. San Antonio's the team that's catching them. Wemby's a freak. All right? Fox is a star. Stephen Castle is emerging to become a star. They're right on the doorstep. This is a really good team in San Antonio. They've come a little quicker than everybody expected.
Yeah.
The third seed is Denver. Denver's Denver. You got Jokic. The guy averages a triple-double. There is no player like him. He does more than anybody else. This team shoots 40% from three, tops in the league. They average 120 points a game, tops in the league. Yet they're only 15-11 at home. Makes no sense to me. But they're still the three seed, and they can beat anybody on any given night. The four is Houston, and this is an interesting team. Durant's still Durant, and he scores, and he lights it up. He does a lot of amazing things out there. But Şengün's a budding star. He's like this. He had a good year last year. He's kept it going this year. It gives him that inside presence that they need. Amen Thompson is taking his game to the next level. This team's dangerous because you have Durant that they have the guy at the end of the game that can take the shot to win the game. Not everybody has it. They have the guy that doesn't miss the shot. Then we go to the Lakers. Everybody loves the Lakers. Ha! But they shoot 50% from the field, better than any team in the league. Doncic is so efficient, and he's a little thinner than he used to be, so maybe he'll play defense now in the playoffs. LeBron continues to perform at a high level despite the age. He flops a lot, but he can still score when he wants to play. When Reeves is healthy, this team's almost unguardable. They have too many guys that can score. The six is Minnesota. Anthony Edwards is elite. He's a great player. He just is. Julius Randle's a great number two for them. He's averaging the 20 and 8 right around there. So he's doing everything that Towns is doing, only he might be slightly a better defender. The Knicks have to think about that trade right there. Minnesota does a lot of things well. They shoot the ball really, really well. That's what kind of sets them apart. 7, 8, 9, 10 are already pretty well solved. You know, Phoenix is probably the 7. They got rid of everybody except Booker, and now they're competitive again. They average 10 steals a game, this team. They actually play really good defense. And then you got Golden State. Portland and the Clippers are going to be 8, 9, and 10. Memphis is pretty far back. Portland's come on a little quicker than a lot of people thought. The Clippers are starting to play better. Golden State still has Steph, Draymond, and whatever they need. So the West is going to be exciting because the top six teams, any one of them can win this West. And that's what I got in the NBA West. Kev?
Yeah, one other NBA point I have.
Yes.
Who do you like coming out of the West first?
Who do I like? I think I like Denver. For no reason whatsoever, but I think Jokic is just the biggest mismatch out there.
Yep. He can do so many things. And perfect segue. They'll win for Doug Moe.
Yes. Kev was there the day I hugged Doug Moe.
I was there the day you hugged Doug Moe.
So the quick story is that there used to be the summer camp before everybody went to Vegas. They went to the Doral Arrowwood up in Westchester, White Plains. A family event that we tailgated for. So we would drink before the event. There was a moment where Kev put his arm around Pat Riley and Dave Checkets and was escorted quickly out. We cornered Ernie Grunfeld that year. And he was answering all our questions till idiot fans came.
Yeah.
And, you know, we heard lots of expletives and lots of fights out there on the court. And then we had the great moment where I hugged Doug Moe. Doug was just standing there out of nowhere, unassuming. And I admired the way he coached. So I went up and I gave him a hug. And he looked stunned. And he's a big man. So then I went to do the same thing to Wes Unseld, who gave me a stiff arm and knocked me right to the floor. But I did hug Doug Moe. Those Denver teams with Alex English and Kiki Vandeweghe and Calvin Natt and Fat Lever and all these guys that could light it up, that was what the NBA is now. But back then, you know, it was unique to just San Antonio and Denver, I think, Kev.
Yeah, I mean, 83 season when they lost to the Pistons in triple overtime, 186-184.
Incredible.
Highest scoring game in NBA history. But that 82-83 season, they averaged 123, which was eight more than the Lakers, who were second. The Showtime Lakers. Exactly. They averaged 8 games more than them. Alex English, Casey Vandeweghe finished 1-2 in the league in scoring. Teammates. Only time it's happened in NBA history. That was Doug Moe in a nutshell. Absolutely. The colorful jackets, the...
Oh, the sloppy, shirt hanging out, everything you loved.
Yeah.
The plaid.
And that's why Diamond gave him a hug.
I did. I admired his coaching ability.
While we're talking about NBA, let's talk a couple of minutes about team wins for the rest of the year. So I'll give you a couple. So the Knicks, they're 35-20. The over-under is 52.5 with 27 games left. Do the Knicks go 18-9? Because that's what they would need to get the over.
I say yes.
Yes.
Over pays you -110.
A little chalky there.
Let's go to Boston. They have 35-19 with 28 left. Their over-under is 52.5. They need to go 18-10 the rest of the way to go over. Do they go over?
No.
I don't think so either.
Okay, so the over would pay you +110, under -130. So Vegas agrees with you. They're probably going under. I'm going to give you the one that actually interests me, and that is Cleveland. Yeah, over-under is 52.5. They need to go 19-8 the rest of the way. Now, their over pays -125, but I think that's an over.
I think they're over also. I think they're playing well right now.
Not over.
Okay, yeah. and then the one in the West I'll give you right off the bat is Houston. 52.5, also 29 left. They need to go 20-9 down the stretch to go over. And their over pays +110. Do they go 20-9, Darren?
I'm going to say no, because I think that the West just beats each other up too much.
Yeah, I see them topping out 17 or 18.
Okay, well, you don't want the under because it's -135.
I tell you, we're really going out there on a limb.
And the last one I'll give you is San Antonio. They're at 38-16 right now. The over-under is 56.5, so they would need to go 19-9 the rest of the way.
I'm going to say they go. I'm going to say they make it. What do you say, Kev?
I'm going to say no.
Okay, under is +105, Kev.
Yeah, Kev.
The over is -125.
My God.
Just a couple of bets I'll give you right off the bat. I got one before we move on. I got one college betting point I want to just give you right off the bat.
Okay.
Tonight, number 20 Arkansas played at number 25 Alabama. The over under was 183.5, Kev. Okay. If you had 231 points, it went over. The game was won by Alabama, 117-115 in double overtime. Four guys for Arkansas fouled out in the game.
Wow.
So if you had over 231, you won, Kev.
There you go. Thank you.
You probably could have bought yourself to 231 and really made a pretty penny on this.
I know. You're kidding, man. Let me tell you. All right. Any other points you want to touch on?
Just a couple of quick MLB things. Tony Clark steps down because, you know, not only does he have an affair, but he has an affair with his wife's sister. What the hell's wrong with people? No, there's no way anyone will find this one out.
No.
Jeez, my God, these guys are so stupid. It just happened.
What was that going to do?
Oh, my God. I mean, the Padres did what the Padres do. They went out and signed five guys to, like, one-year deals. And Ty France, Walker Buehler, Marquez, Canning, and Castellanos, because Philly's paying them $20 million. So that was probably the biggest moves of the weekend. I mean, Gary Sanchez goes back to Milwaukee officially. Zach Gallen back with Arizona.
Yeah.
Shelby Miller goes to the Cubs. Remember when Biggio was a big deal with the Astros? Well, he's back there. Only different Biggio now. You know, the great Connor Joe, who gets passed around like a hot potato, he ended up in Seattle this week. You know, the Yankees got Rafael Montero to the minor league contract. I mean, the locals.
And it happened after we were on last week. They also brought back Paul Goldschmidt.
Yeah, I thought it was before. Okay, that you're 100% right, G. They brought back Goldschmidt. the thing with the AJ Preller got an extension because he's not David Stearns or Brian Cashman. He's actually an exciting GM that tries to do things even when they're selling the team and they can't do anything. At least he goes out and does things. This is brutal to watch.
Stearns does things. He gets rid of the popular players.
Exactly. They go out, they acquire all of this young talent, and they trade it before they come to the majors. You got to love this team. Yeah. Anyway, they kept them around. I also have a couple of treasures. You guys have anything else before I get to them?
Kev, any thoughts about the Mets minor league signings of outfielder Michael Tauchman or catcher Ben Revolt?
Big boost. I mean, you know, catching depth in the minors and Tauchman, just in case Benji's not ready. He's another option in right field short term.
My only other baseball thing was Darren Twins lost pitcher Pablo Lopez to a torn UCL. He's done for the year. So
wow.
Brutal.
All right, Darren, you got gems?
Well, I have treasures. Kev does treasures. Okay, a little baseball here to start. Before making his major league debut in 1977, Lance Parrish worked briefly as a bodyguard for Tina Turner. In 1943, Josh Gibson fell into a coma and was diagnosed with a brain tumor. He denied surgery and went on to have one of his best seasons. He hit .466 with 20 homers in 68 games. His OPS plus was .281.
Wow.
Just throwing it out there. I know you hate this, but I have to do it to you, Kev. Clemson baseball does something very interesting in the fourth inning of every home game. They do a support the troops tradition. All right, they go out into the stands, and everyone that was a veteran, they shake their hand. This week they hosted Army. Army went in there with them. So they both went out there. I thought it was a really cool thing. I know you don't like them, but it was a great move. Kev, you brought it to my attention too. I had also seen it. But Montana Solomon Tuliapapu has been granted his ninth year of eligibility, G. So therefore, you and I could go back. We still might have eligibility in our 50s. You know, let's see what happens there.
He's got to be 50 next year, so you know that we can play with him.
The last one is a kind of a question for both of you guys, just to see what you know. College basketball's all time win leaders, the top 10 teams. Just throw them out there. Tell me who do you think the top teams are?
UCLA.
UCLA's 5. What'd you say, Kev?
North Carolina.
North Carolina's 4.
Duke.
Duke is North Carolina's 3. Duke is 4. Sorry.
Okay.
Michigan.
Michigan's not there. Don't think too hard, guys.
Indiana.
Indiana's 10.
Okay. UConn.
UConn's not in it. Kentucky's 1. Kansas is 2.
Yes, that was where I was going. Okay.
UNC 3. Duke 4. UCLA 5. The 6th team is the one I couldn't get. Temple.
Temple. Wow. Temple.
7 is the Cuse. 8 is Notre Dame, 9 is St. John's, and 10 is Indiana. Those are the top 10 most winningest college basketball programs of all time. And that's all I got.
All right. I got one thing I want to read this to you guys. So,
yes, sir.
Last week, 90-year-old, 3-time Masters champion Gary Player revealed that Augusta National denied his request to play a round on the iconic golf course with his 3 grandsons. Despite decades of association with the club, Player expressed disappointment, saying, "I've been an ambassador for Augusta for all these years, and they won't let me have one round of golf in my life with my 3 grandsons." He noted that other major championship venues have allowed such a request, but Augusta's current management declined. And he added, "These are the times we live in. I accept it, but I accept it with sadness." That's just horrible by Augusta, man. Oh, really? Gary Player? Yeah. Come on.
He's up at Mount Rushmore. You know what I mean? He's up there. He's one of the best ever. You let him play.
I had to read it to you because I was just shocked that they really denied 90-year-old Gary Player wanted to play around the golf with his 3 grandsons, and you denied his request.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I thought
that was horrible. The only other golf note was last week, Colin Morikawa won the ATT Pebble Beach.
That's a nice win for Colin.
Yeah. Scott in another late run. I think he's starting to take this tact of spotting the field like 10 strokes in the first round and see if he can go catch them because he's too bored winning every week otherwise.
He's just so much. He's playing chess. Everybody else is playing checkers out there. But you know, we'll see what happens as it goes forward as we get into the majors, which we're not that far away from. So,
well, the players is coming up real soon.
Yeah, it's next month, right? Isn't that in March?
Yeah. The players is next month, March.
Yep, absolutely. Anything else for you guys before we wrap this shindig up?
The players is March 10th to the 15th.
All right. Week before we go and gamble on everything.
Selection Sunday.
Right. Exactly. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. Darren here with Kevin, here with Gino, talking about the wonderful, wild, and wacky world of sports. A wacky world where they might actually decide gold medals on 3-on-3 overtime hockey. How in the hell does that happen? Please download the program anywhere you can get the podcast, whether it be Apple Podcast, Spotify, TuneIn, whatever you like. We've been posting a lot on social. Please like our post. Please share our post. If you don't like them, pretend you like them. If you don't want to share them, do it anyway. It feels better to do the right thing. Just do it. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.
Hello, America. It's your new favorite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two-fourths of the British podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts. We do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.